This morning we're back in Paul's letter to the Philippians in our series, The Joy-Filled Life. I think it would be easy for us to miss the significance of our passage this morning, Philippians 2, 19 through 30, if we take it just as Paul relaying information about travel plans. This passage goes much deeper than Google Maps. It's actually a very rich description of the life centered on service of Jesus Christ. I read the heartbreaking story of a group serving in Calcutta, India, destitute city there. And while they were walking the streets, they stumbled across a man lying under a filthy, fly-infested blanket. There was a 3-foot trail of diarrhea making its way down toward the gutter, and it was obvious to anyone passing by that the person under the blanket was either dying or dead. So one of the men tapped the body on the shoulder to see if it was still alive, and the body moved, so he pulled the blanket down away from the face and to see a helpless young man in his 20s. And he was stunned by their approach. And when he realized they were there to help him, he began weeping uncontrollably. Crowd gathered and he continued to cry, and they didn't have much to work with, but one of the women took some newspaper and a bottle of water and used that newspaper to clean the diarrhea and the water to rinse it off. They asked him his name. He said, Tutela Das. He was lost, afraid, and alone. His body was a leathery skin skeleton. His bulging eyes accentuated the shape of his skull, and he kept on crying. The group tried to flag down a taxi, but none of them would stop. And the crowd continued to increase, but no one wanted to help. Finally, a taxi stopped, and the man was quickly loaded in the taxi, and it took off quickly for Mother Teresa's house for the dying. The group just kind of stood there in disbelief. And one of the men happened to look up at that moment and he saw a church and a sign just feet from where this man had been lying near the gutter. And the sign read, All are welcome here. And throughout the whole ordeal, the church people were standing and watching behind a closed gate. How sad. I think in many ways it seems like that concept of serving others, regardless of the cost, regardless of the risk, has been lost in the modern church. Jesus said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me. Whoever desires to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. That is the life worthy of the gospel of Christ. We read of Paul's example and testimony. He is in prison in Rome for faithfully preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. He said, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. We've read of the perfect example of Jesus Christ who emptied himself, took on the very nature of a servant and was obedient to death on a cross. And today we're going to read of two more examples. And they're going to teach us a very important truth, and that is this. God gives us joy when we willingly serve others. These are two ordinary, everyday guys. They're known to the church at Philippi, and Paul presents them as living, breathing examples of what he's been teaching throughout this letter thus far. Their names are Timothy and Epaphroditus. And I believe Paul's going to take their examples and he's going to reveal to us three characteristics of the service-centered life. The first characteristic of that service-centered life is a willingness to go anywhere. A willingness to go anywhere. And you can see in your Bible probably this morning, this text is broken into two paragraphs. The first is about Timothy and the second is about Epaphroditus. For each of these points, I want to take Timothy first, and then I want to deal with Epaphroditus under each one. So a willingness to go anywhere. Let's first look at the example of Timothy, verse 19. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, that I also may be cheered when I receive news about you. Well, Paul first met this young man, Timothy, on his first missionary journey to the region of Lystra. And Timothy was there, and he was the son of a Jewish mother and a Gentile father. And after Paul led him to the Lord, he referred to him as my beloved son in the faith. Later on, he would recruit Timothy to go along with him in his second missionary journey. And they traveled the whole known world together, taking the gospel to the lost. Later on, Timothy would serve as Paul's representative to various churches in various locations. He would also himself serve as pastor at the church of Ephesus. In the context of this letter, Timothy is in Rome, where Paul is imprisoned, and he's serving as Paul's co-worker, connected with the church at Philippi. So Paul plans to send Timothy back to Philippi from Rome to take a report back to the church there about the outcome of his trial, which is still pending. He also longs to hear about the progress of their faith. Remember, Paul has this deep love and care and concern for the church at Philippi. This is his most personal and heartfelt letter. They are his joy and his crown, so he desires to hear a good report about them. But Paul's not quite ready to send Timothy. Timothy is extremely valuable to him in the ministry and at Rome while he's in prison there. Timothy is that amazing example of someone willing to go anywhere. There were hundreds of believers at Rome. 26 are named individually in Paul's letter to the Romans. But Paul knows where to turn if he has someone to ask to go somewhere, someone he can trust, someone who will go no matter where that leads him. And that's Timothy. I want to share with you a modern day example of a willingness to go anywhere. This man's name is Dr. Glenn Barden. I'd like to show it to you through video.
I have been blessed by the Lord so far as my mind seemingly working all right and having steadiness of hands. And if the Lord has blessed me in that manner, then I want to be sure that I'm using it. So that's why I've remained available in regards to this work. Every patient is very much an individual, and each one has a unique set of needs. People that have no stake in the conflict are getting just devastated. You want to do more than you're physically capable of doing. And you know that it's not all going to work out exactly the way you want to, but you keep moving forward.
فأنا سمعت صوت الانفجار ورجعت ركض يعني على البيت. فقال لي بابا انفجرت علي هاي الإطلاقة وقعت مني على الكاشي. الحمد لله في تحسن تقريبا هاي أربع يعني خلينا نقول أربع عمليات تسوى يعني رجلين العناية والاهتمام والرعاية. فيعني تعرف هذا نصف العلاج والابتسامة يعني هذه الأمور متكاملة فتقريبا خفف أو نسى أنه المصاب الكبير. فأنت في وقت الأزمة تحتاج إلى يد تمد العون إليك, ما هو أفضل من هذا الشيء يخفف معاناة الناس.
My goal is to make sure they do know that we care for them, and there's a place for me to serve young, middle-aged, or more senior, and if you're willing, the Lord will allow.
Here's a retired orthopedic surgeon can travel anywhere in the world that his heart desires. London, Paris, or Cancun, Honolulu, or Tokyo. But he chooses Mosul, a city in northern Iraq. It's amazing. Did you catch what he said at the end of that video? He said, "There's a place for you to serve, young, middle-aged, or more senior. If you are willing, the Lord will allow." What an example, modern-day example to us of a willingness to go anywhere. Paul gives us another example in our text too of a willingness to go anywhere in verse 25. He writes, "But I think it is necessary to send back to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, who is also your messenger, whom you sent to take care of my needs." So Paul plans to send Timothy, but not quite yet. So he turns to another trusted co-worker of his to deliver this letter immediately, and that's Epaphroditus. Epaphroditus was a native of Philippi, mentioned only twice in the Scriptures, here and also in chapter 4 and verse 18. He had a common Greek name that originally meant favorite of Aphrodite, the goddess of love. That name came to mean lovely or charming. It's interesting to me that Paul was a full Jew, a Hebrew of Hebrews. Timothy is part Jew and part Gentile. And here we have Epaphroditus, who is very likely full Gentile. All three shining examples of the service-centered life. Epaphroditus is a trusted member at the church, trusted so much that they'll send him with a gift for Paul. And he makes that more than 700 mile journey, a dangerous, grueling, and difficult journey from Philippi to Rome on foot and by boat. Epaphroditus leaves his family and his friends and everything familiar to him to take this gift to Paul. And beyond that, to remain there in Rome to care for Paul and his needs. It's obvious that Paul thinks highly of this messenger from Philippi. That word messenger is a word also translated apostle in the Scriptures. Though Epaphroditus is not an apostle in the sense that Paul is an apostle, having seen the resurrected Christ and then being personally commissioned by Christ, that's not true of Epaphroditus. But in the broader sense of an apostle, Epaphroditus is a sent one. He's a messenger. He's been sent from Philippi to Rome. And there are priestly overtones here. He's performing a sacred service to Paul on behalf of the church. Let me share with you that other place where Epaphroditus is mentioned in the Scriptures. Philippians 4 and verse 18. "I have received full payment," Paul says, "and have more than enough. I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God." And notice how Paul refers to Epaphroditus in verse 25. He refers to him affectionately as a dear brother. He refers to him as a fellow worker in the advancement of the gospel. And then he refers to him as a fellow soldier, someone who's willing to stand up in the face of danger and to unashamedly preach Christ crucified and risen. That's Epaphroditus. He's being sent back immediately with this letter, and for other reasons that we'll explore a little more in a moment. So Timothy and Epaphroditus, two wonderful examples of the service-centered life. Two men willing to go anywhere. And I think back to the book of Acts. Paul, on numerous occasions, wanted to do certain things. He wanted to go to Bithynia and preach the gospel there. He wanted to visit Rome. But what did he do? He submitted his plans to God's will. He submitted his plans to the Spirit of God and His leading. I think of Christ, who submitted Himself to the Father's will and left the glories of heaven and experienced humanity in a sin-filled world, though He remained sinless, and He went to and experienced death on a cross. I think of Dr. Glenn Barden from the video, who said, "If you are willing, the Lord will allow. What about you? Are you exemplifying that first characteristic of the service-centered life? Are you truly willing to go anywhere to serve others? Jesus said, go and make disciples of all nations. I don't know, maybe go and make disciples for you is walking across the aisle of this church. That's God's will for you, walking across the aisle. Maybe go for you is going to another level of the church and serving with our children or with our youth or in Celebrate Recovery. Maybe go for you is walking across the backyard, crossing the fence and going to that neighbor. Maybe it's going across the city or the county or our country or the world. I don't know. But the service-centered life is characterized by a willingness to go anywhere. Second characteristic is a willingness to serve anyone. Let's go back to Timothy's example again in verse 20. I have no one else like him who takes a genuine interest in your welfare. For everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. That phrase, no one like him, literally means no one of equal soul. Paul can think of no one else in the universe who has that same love and concern and care for the Philippians that he has. No one else except Timothy. When Paul would ultimately send Timothy back, he was so trustworthy and so dependable that it was like Paul was sending himself back to the church at Philippi. Notice Paul's statement in verse 21. Everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. You might remember back in chapter 1, Paul stands in contrast to the other preachers, those who preach Christ out of rivalry and envy and selfish ambition. He stands in contrast. In the same way, Timothy is standing in contrast to those around him. A wonderful example of Paul's earlier teacher in chapter 2 and verses 3 and 4, where he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. Timothy had that genuine concern for the physical and the emotional and the spiritual well-being of those around him. He's also committed to advancing the gospel, which is about people. And he would do it no matter the cost. I think he had that mind of Jesus, who when he saw the multitudes, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless. They were like sheep without a shepherd. I love what Warren Wiersbe says on this point. He says, in a very real sense, all of us live in either Philippians 1:21 or 2:21. We either live in Philippians 1:21, to live is Christ and to die is gain, or in 2:21, everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. Where are you living? Is your life characterized by Philippians 1:21 or Philippians 2:21? I'll share the story of David Brainerd. He was a missionary in America to the Native Americans up in the northeastern region of our country back in the 1700s. He died as a young man, only 29 years old. Yet his passionate devotion to Christ, his passionate devotion to the gospel has affected many generations of Christians, especially through his journal which he wrote. Impacted men like William Carey and Henry Martin and Jim Elliot. He battled many difficulties on the mission field. He struggled with loneliness, struggled with tuberculosis, struggled with very little outward success in the ministry. But in New Jersey, the Native Americans there were receptive to the gospel, so he poured his life out in service to them. In his own words, he determined to burn out in one continual flame for God. By the fall of 1746, he began increasingly coughing up blood because of the tuberculosis, and he was taken in by the famous preacher Jonathan Edwards in Northampton, Massachusetts. He would spend his last months there, and he was cared for by Jonathan Edwards' daughter, Jerusha. She would be by the bedside and serve his every need during that time. He would enter into the presence of his Lord on October 9th, 1747. Only 4 months later, Jerusha would also enter into the presence of the Lord, having contracted the tuberculosis from David Brainerd. 18 years old when she went to be with the Lord. David Brainerd, Jerusha Edwards, shining examples of a willingness to serve anyone. Willing to serve absolutely anyone. Paul gives us another example here in our text, Epaphroditus. He has this same heart for others. Look at verse 26. For he longs for all of you and is distressed because you heard he was ill. Indeed, he was ill and almost died, but God had mercy on him. Not only on him, but also on me, to spare me sorrow upon sorrow. Therefore, I am all the more eager to send him, so that when you see him again, you may be glad, and I may have less anxiety. So it seems like either on the journey to Rome, that long, difficult 700-mile journey, or after he arrived in Rome, Epaphroditus became extremely ill and very near death. But God in His mercy spared his life and spared Paul sorrow upon sorrow, that sorrow of losing a trusted co-worker and a dear friend. Epaphroditus, devoted to the interests of others. Just think about it. He's in Rome. Why? Because he loves Paul and he cares about him. He's putting Paul's interests before his own. He's gone off to Rome, left all that he knows as a volunteer willingly. And he longs for the believers at Philippi, that same longing that Paul had for them. He's distressed for them. Not distressed for himself. He's distressed for the believers at Philippi. That word distress describes a heavy state of restlessness from a time of trauma. It's actually the same word used of Jesus as he prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane. That's amazing to me here that Epaphroditus is more concerned about his brothers and sisters worrying about him than he is about his own health and his own life, looking out for the interests of others. What an example there that he is. And he's eager to go back. He wants to ease their anxiety. He wants to share with them firsthand how God has spared his life. So Paul sends back Epaphroditus to bring joy to the church and to go back and to serve there again where he's needed most. And Paul shares all this detail. Why? Because he doesn't want there to be any misunderstanding when Epaphroditus rolls into town. No, he's not quit. No, he's not struggled with something. He has been faithful to Christ and he has been faithful in meeting my needs. Paul wants the church to know that. What amazing examples here of a willingness to serve anyone. Timothy and Epaphroditus, David Brainerd and Jerusha Edwards. What about you? What about me? Who are you willing to serve? The answer to that question ought to be anyone. Absolutely anyone. People of any age or any race, any culture, any political persuasion, any physical or emotional condition, any lifestyle. The service-centered life is characterized by a willingness to serve anyone. Then the final characteristic of the service-centered life is a willingness to do anything. A willingness to do anything. Let's start again with Timothy in verse 22. But you know that Timothy has proved himself, because as a son with his father, he has served with me in the work of the gospel. I hope therefore to send him as soon as I see how things go for me. And I am confident in the Lord that I myself will come soon. Notice Paul says Timothy has served. That's the second time we see Timothy referred to as a servant in this letter. First in the greeting, he was called a servant of Jesus Christ. And now again, here we see him serving with Paul. That Greek word emphasizes humility and submission and devotion and obedience. It speaks of a person who willingly and loyally serves their master. And that's Timothy. That's the testimony he has. That was the testimony of our Savior too, wasn't it? Think of Jesus washing the disciples' feet. No greater act of humility and submission and loyalty than that. So Jesus did something that was, in the first century, an act of the lowest ranking servant. Silently got up from the table and He stripped down into a servant's attire, wrapped a towel around His waist, and went around and washed the disciples' feet one by one, even Judas. Just think about that. Jesus came down from the most lofty position, the glories of heaven as the Creator and the Sustainer of the universe, down to the lowliest position of a servant, as He washed the mud and the grime and the dirt from the feet of sinful men. Consider His words here, John 13 and verse 14. "Now that I, your Lord and Teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him." Jesus is that perfect example of a willingness to do anything, absolutely anything, and He commands us to do the same. And Timothy here has proven himself all throughout the years as that kind of man, willing to do anything. It all began with Paul leading Timothy to the Lord, and then them going together on that first missionary journey. Now 10 years have gone by. Timothy, under the discipleship of Paul, has grown in his spiritual maturity. Everywhere he served, he has a wonderful reputation as a man of God, as a servant there. He's been tested through the rigors of ministry. He has been found faithful in every way. As a son to a father, as Paul says. As a servant to his master, Timothy is faithful. A man with a willingness to do anything. For 8 seasons, Discovery Channel aired the TV series Dirty Jobs with Mike Rowe. Some of you may have seen that series. In each episode, Mike performs a difficult, strange, disgusting occupational duty alongside typical employees. He did hundreds of these dirty jobs, and then he gave his list of his top 5. Let me share it with you. Number 5, sewer inspector. That's pretty dirty. Number 4, snake wrangler. Number 3, chicken sexer, to determine if the chicks will be making your omelets or your McNuggets. Number 2, horse inseminator. We'll leave that one alone. Number 1, shark suit tester, about which Mike said this: you put on the suit, you hop in the water, you create a bloodbath of chum. The sharks come in and you let them bite you. If you live, the suit works. If you don't, that's unfortunate. People actually do these things to make a living. I bet if this show aired in the first century, servant foot washer would have made that list. What are you willing to do in the service of others? Is there anything that is below you in your serving in the church and in our community and in the world? What about that diaper that needs changing? What about that toilet that needs unclogging? What about that rambunctious child who needs loving? What about that confused widow who needs visiting? If you desire to live that service-centered life, then absolutely nothing is below you. Nothing can be below any of us. Like Jesus and Paul and Timothy, we must be willing to do anything for others. And let's turn our attention back to Epaphroditus one more time. Verse 29. "Welcome him in the Lord with great joy, and honor men like him, because he almost died for the work of Christ, risking his life to make up for the help you could not give me. So Epaphroditus risked his personal health and his very life to deliver gifts from the Philippians to Paul. Beyond risking his life, he also made up for the help they couldn't give. He did that by representing the church, by his very presence with Paul. He was to be joyfully welcomed by the church and honored there. Paul gives similar instruction in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord, and who admonish you. Hold them in the highest regard and love because of their work. So Epaphroditus, he's that kind of man, willing to do anything. He didn't just desire to give Paul a gift. No, he desired to give Paul his very life by volunteering to go and to deliver that gift and to remain in Rome and stand with him in the face of persecution. I think there's a parallel here. I think there's a parallel here with Jesus right here in chapter 2. Remember, Jesus humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. And God exalted him to the highest place. Epaphroditus humbled himself, became obedient to death, though God spared his life. And he was to be given honor in the church, exalted and given honor there. Timothy and Epaphroditus, two wonderful examples of a willingness to do anything. So God gives us joy, gives us great joy when we willingly serve others. That service-centered life is characterized by a willingness to go anywhere, a willingness to serve anyone, and a willingness to do anything. There were many times my family was humbled in our service in Papua New Guinea. One such time was on a weekend trip to a women's conference where Amy had been asked to speak, and it was rainy season. And during rainy season in Papua New Guinea, it's good for the crops, but really tough on the people, because the people do all their walking, all their working, a lot of their living happens outside. In the Chimbu province where we were serving that weekend, the temperatures can dip below 50 in the evening. So think about this. You're living in a thatched hut with a dirt floor. You have no heat. You have no warm shower. And you have to try to get warm in that moist and cold hut after being dumped on by rain. It makes for a very long and miserable evening. On the first night of that conference, I'll never forget it, we were sleeping in the tent, my family. It just started dumping the rain in the middle of the night. And the people there were so concerned about my family that we heard them digging all night long. Here's what they were doing. They're out around that tent with shovels, digging trenches to divert the water away from that tent all night long. I didn't expect that treatment at all. Certainly not. I learned a very valuable lesson that evening. And it's this: Dan, you need to get over yourself. You really need to get over yourself. You need to be a whole lot more like these humble servants that you've come to speak and teach about the gospel. I give you the same challenge this morning. Get over yourselves. Get over yourself. I say that as lovingly as I possibly can. I say it to myself first. Get over yourself, Dan. But church, let's get over ourselves. Let's live in Philippians 1:21. To live is Christ, and to die is gain. Let's not live in Philippians 2:21. Everyone looks out for his own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. I want to encourage you this morning. Are you bored in your Christian life? Are you bored in your involvement in this local church? If you are, get busy serving. Get busy serving anywhere, serving anyone, doing anything. And there are a multitude of opportunities here at Johnston Chapel where we can plug you in and serve. It is no problem whatsoever. Pastor Jason would agree to that. Pastor Jim would. We have so many opportunities for you here. If you are interested in serving, if you're bored, if you want some excitement in the Christian life, there is no greater joy than willingly serving others. We can help you with that today. Let's pray together.